from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Le Chaux Dome has set up its temporary facility. The tent flaps flapping in the breeze in Seattle, Washington today. You know, you got to be careful what you brag about or even what you compliment people about. Because I said to people up here all this week since I arrived, you know, Seattle has a bad rap because I've been here several times and it's people always think, oh, Seattle, it's always raining and ugly. And I would say to people up here, man, every time I've been up here and it's been different times of the year, it's been beautiful, sunny, blue skies. So you know what happened. You know what it's like outside today and yesterday. We had like 2 days of autumn and then winter. And winter in Seattle is it rains, it blows, and it's gray. It's gray, ladies and gentlemen. It's lovely gray. Now, don't get the wrong idea. I'm not one of those Californians who's fled already. Well, I fled, but not for that reason. I'm going back because I want to express my gratitude to the people of the state of California for putting such faith in me that they would give me that gift for the next 3 years of Arnold. So you bet I'm going back. Here's a question. Here's the question, actually, in the wake of all that. Is it a revolution or a restoration? You know, people, I think, voted clearly wanting something new. But are they really going to get something old? Did you notice who came out of Arnold's closet the day after the election? I mean, all during the campaign, the spokespeople for Arnold were his campaign manager, David Dreyer, an Orange County, is he Orange County? He's L.A. area congressman who doesn't have much of a national reputation and doesn't have much baggage, as they say, and Arnold's press spokesman. The day after he wins, who's on CNN like every day now speaking on behalf? Is the head of his campaign, former Governor Pete Wilson. Why wasn't Pete out there during the campaign to let people know he was pulling, if not the strings, at least you can't pull the buttons, pulling something. Now we learn there's Pete. Arnold holds press conferences after the election to answer questions. Now, that's interesting timing. Anyway, so the question is it a revolution or is it just, hey, Pete, welcome back? You had a term limit, so you had to find a guy. Now, I offer, because I wasn't asked, well, I was asked by a couple of TV guys, but so it prompted me to concoct a theory. And here's my theory. Everybody's got a theory about what really happened. And why in California, a budget deficit, albeit $38 billion, pretty big, got people mad, whereas on the national level, ho-hum, $400 billion, what the hell. So here's my theory. It boils down to the media. As usual, in the national political realm, we hear about that budget deficit every day to the point where, far from being interesting, it's just, please stop. Please stop with the budget deficit. Please, please. In California, newspapers and television stations and radio stations, for the most part, stopped covering Sacramento about 10 to 15 years ago. They had consultants telling them, people in California don't care about politics. Go with a car crash. Go with a car chase. Go with something with cars. Go with a murder in a car. That's good. So $38 billion budget deficit came as a roaring surprise out of the blue. Why didn't you tell us, Gray Davis? Well, And similarly with the electricity deregulation, which happened in broad daylight, but seemed like total darkness because there were no media there to cover it. And then when the promised price cuts for electricity turned out to be price increases, it was like, why didn't you tell us? The question, why didn't you tell us, ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest should be directed to your local, if you live in California, to your local TV station or newspaper, because they're the ones that didn't tell you. If I'm a betting man, here are the two things I think are going on right now. Well, as you know, one of the things is that Arnold is forming his cabinet with the advice of 65 of the state's wisest people. But here are the two other things I think are going on right now that I would bet on. One, some Democrat is already printing up recall petitions. And two, some woman that you probably see a lot on television, quote, news shows, is phoning up all those gals who complained of being groped saying, want to press charges? Take that to the bank, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, welcome to the show.
My love song needs another line with more divine. That your name will rhyme with while I sing in time with every thump and bump, a beat on my heart. Do-do-da, do-do-da, do-do-do-da, the beat of my heart. Do-do-da, 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 the beat of my heart. Clockety drum, 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 in beat on my heart. Once a thousand flashed the flowers and found the showers and theater, a better sound to the pound and beat on my heart. It thinks you're mine. My love song needs another line with more divine. The tone ain't rhyme with what I sing and time with every thump and bump and beat on my heart. Listen to the beat, listen to the beat, listen to the beat. Listen to the beat.
Right one. the queen of the little red, white, and blue. She was the queen of the little red, white, and blue. Said, ooh, why get you spy, boy? Prepare yourself to die, boy. Medicine man got a heap strong power. You know better than to mess with me. Like a rival, la, 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 proof. Like a rival, the la, 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 proof, proof. If you see a spy boy sitting in the bush, mess him on his head, give him a push. Get out the dishes, get out the pain. Ooh, he fell for the medicine man. La 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 la. Come on down, boy, and follow me. Wham, bam, thank you, man. So come on, boy, and follow me.
Mama Ruth.
She was the queen of the little, little white and blue.
Mama Ruth.
She was the queen of the little, little white and blue. Come on, boy, now follow me. Wham, bam, hang the hand. Come on, boy, now follow me. And wham, bam, spram, sam. Come on, boy, now follow me.
From the Emerald City, Seattle, Washington. Close, just spitting distance from Puget Sound, ladies and gentlemen, but don't try it. It's so windy, may come back to haunt you. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another to a Northwest edition of Le Show for what looks like winter, but it's only fall. So, yeah, Pete Wilson is out of Arnold's closet, and Donald Rumsfeld is back in, well, not back, is in George Bush's doghouse, looks like. I don't know if you followed that this week, but close watchers of the Washington bureaucratic dance were all a titter about the fact that at the beginning of the week, the New York Times had a story from Condoleezza, from the lips of Condoleezza Rice, announcing that there had been a new group formed under her direction to run the post-war Iraqi deal. This was news because up to now, the Pentagon, Don Rumsfeld's Pentagon, had been in charge. And Rumsfeld held a press conference the next day in front of European reporters and said, well, he hadn't been told this was happening, which is kind of odd because this is an administration that's sort of known for, hey, we all stick together, we all shut up. And Rumsfeld was so irritated that when a German reporter pressed him on the issue, which is the most painful place to be pressed, he cracked back, don't you speak English? To a German reporter. Reporter refrained from the obvious response. Yeah, don't you speak German? He didn't say that. But so somebody got Rumsfeld's goat, and it appears to have been Condoleezza Rice. Now, what was announced was that she would be coordinating. This was new. Her new committee was going to be coordinating, or as Rumsfeld called it, her little committee, was going to be coordinating. And people who watch this sort of stuff said, Isn't that her job all along? Isn't that the job of the National Security Advisor to coordinate? Why is this new? What hasn't she been coordinating up to now? And why? How embarrassing for a a bureaucratic fox like Donald Rumsfeld to be outfoxed by a gal. Ooh, man, I'd hate to be his dog this weekend. And then there's the Democrat, well, the whole debate. The Democratic debate, I don't know if you saw it. I love the fact that David Dreyer, again, Arnold Schwarzenegger's co-campaign chairman, along with Pete Wilson. Pete, welcome back to the spotlight, babe. Got a nice tan. David Dreyer asked whether he saw the Democratic debate, because he was on some yak show, said, well, of course not. I did read the transcript. No, I watched the debate. Some of us think it's easier to watch television than to read. And I, along with Donald Rumsfeld's dog, I would hate to be a Democrat running for president having to explain that vote. Not even running for president. Senator Jay Rockefeller didn't look too comfortable explaining that vote on one of the Sunday Yak shows. That vote, of course, being the vote to approve what turned out to be the little thing in Iraq. They are falling all over themselves to invent things that they thought they were voting for, but not war. One quote that keeps not being brought up, one thing that neither the interrogators nor the few Democrats who opposed the war straight out, nor the Democrats who are explaining their vote, nobody seems to recall this. Me, I'm cursed with this memory thing. I know. It's so out of date. Wasn't it Tom Daschle, the head of the Senate Democrats, who said just about a year ago, we want to get this Iraq war resolution passed us so we can talk about what's really important, prescription drugs. He didn't mean for Rush Limbaugh. He meant prescription drug benefits for seniors. Rush is about 3 years away. Because that's what the Democrats thought was their winning issue last November. That's what they wanted to talk about in the Senate. Get this Iraq thing, just pass it and get it out of the way. That's what was really going on, wasn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong, but... And that's what they can't say. On the other hand, I'd hate to be the administration, too, because they're in the position of saying, we didn't say it was an imminent threat. They had their first wave of their public relations offensive defending the war this week. And as part of that, of course, the media is not telling enough of the good news. Well, you know, here's what's interesting. The anti-war people thought the media was in the administration's pocket all during the war. And the pro-war people now think that the media are too eager to tell the bad news in the wake of the war. And they may both be right. But in any case, I would hate to go to the American people with this as my ringing banner. We didn't say it was an imminent threat. Man, you got to do better than that. You've got to come with something better than that. Really, go focus group something, because we didn't say it was imminent. That is not that's not a bumper sticker. That's not a button. That's a nothing. Now, I would suggest that, especially after having seen Gray Davis's top 10 list on the David Letterman show. Did you see that? They had Gray Davis making probably his last public appearance, reading a top 10 list of recommendations for Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it occurred to me after seeing that, I mean, we know that Gray Davis was not made for television, but after seeing that and the Democratic debate, somebody's got to hire Al Sharpton as a joke writer, because he's too good. He's not going to be president, but I would say either the Letterman or the Leno show, just make Al an offer, because he's funny. He is good. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for, yes, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
First, ironically, the non-apology of the week, Pat Robertson, the head of the Christian Broadcasting Network and the host of the 700 Club, was interviewing a guy who's written a book very critical of the State Department. And in his introductory remarks, Pat Robertson of the Christian Broadcasting Network, delivered remarks that boiled down to advocating blowing up the State Department with a nuclear device. A Christian pastor, ladies and gentlemen, he is so far. The State Department, of course, reacted with apoplexy, undiplomatic apoplexy. Pat Robertson has so far refused comment. Apology to come. Maryland's First Lady has delivered two apologies for saying she'd like to shoot Britney Spears. That would be the model for Pat Robertson. I think two apologies at least now. Kendall Ehrlicht told a conference on domestic violence last week, quote, "Really, if I had an opportunity to shoot Britney Spears, I think I would," unquote. Ehrlicht, the pregnant and the mother of a four-year-old boy, is appalled by the 21-year-old's chain-smoking, suggestive lyrics, sexy poses, and her televised smooch with Madonna. Here's an interesting slant. Madonna later complained about Britney's tobacco breath. It's a hard life for Madonna, isn't it? "Oh my goodness, what I would do if I had a daughter who's seeing these sexual images and have peer pressure," Ehrlicht complained. Then she delivered the remark about wanting to shoot Britney Spears. She later quickly apologized. She suggested that perhaps Ms. Spears could come to Maryland so she could apologize in person and have a benefit conference for domestic violence programs, at Ehrlich spokeswoman Megan Sawinski. "As of yet, we have not heard from Britney Spears or her publicists," they say. America Online, the nation's largest internet provider, is their name still on their own service? They've apologized to state and local officials for a derogatory newspaper ad toward Boise, Idaho's capital city. To make up for the ad suggesting that Boise was not a fit place to launch a new product, America Online set up a free concert at a Boise concert hall for Wednesday, featuring the rock group Counting Crows, and donated $25,000 to the Boise School District for music programs. "I've actually been to Boise many times," AOL Senior Vice President Richard Taylor. "I love this city." After seeing the ad in a New York newspaper touting a new service and declaring, "You didn't think we'd launch something like this in Boise, did you?" Governor Dirk Kempthorne fired off a note to AOL. A note? Why not an instant message? Complaining about the negative reference to Boise and offering them the chance to make up for it. "They have made amends," the governor said this week. "They've done it with class." Sorry. And they are taking their name off their own service. No, they're not. Not a lot of apologies this week, ladies and gentlemen. Not a sorry week. This will be the last. Author David Limbaugh apologized for mistakenly including a Tupelo school district in his new best-selling book about incidents he calls anti-Christian. Anti-Christian incidents. That wouldn't include the head of the Christian Broadcasting Network calling for the nuking of the State Department. No, it would not. Thank you for asking. In his book, quote, "Persecution, How Liberals Are Waging War Against Christianity," unquote, David Limbaugh, describes the removal of explicitly Christian references from Christmas songs at an unidentified Tupelo elementary school and students being led in chants of "Celebrate Kwanzaa." His source was a November 2000 news release from the Tupelo-based American Family Association Center for Law and Policy. Not a long enough name. It carried a Tupelo dateline, and Limbaugh said, "I mistakenly inferred the incident occurred in Tupelo." In fact, the news release was about a dispute in State College, Pennsylvania. The American Family Association had asked an appeals court to reinstate a lawsuit alleging that the 1999 holiday program at State College's Coral Street Elementary School presented Christmas as a celebration unworthy of respect. Limbaugh, an attorney and columnist, who was the brother of radio commentator Rush Limbaugh, apologized for the error in a letter published in this week's Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Quote, "I regret this unintentional factual error in my book and sincerely apologize for attributing this to a Tupelo school and for any discomfort this may have caused anyone in the area or in the school district," he wrote. In Tupelo schools, choral groups routinely sing religious music, including Christmas carols. It is, need one point out, in Mississippi. You would have thought, if you had your BS detector at all connected, a story saying they're taking the Christianness out of Christmas in Mississippi, you'd at least make a phone call. You'd call your brother. But no, his brother is busy, as you may have noticed, ladies and gentlemen. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature. Rush Limbaugh this week dropped the other shoe. You know there was a tabloid story reporting, alleging, smearing, smashing, bashing Limbaugh, saying that his housekeeper, quoting his housekeeper, is saying that she had purchased thousands and thousands of prescription painkillers for Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh, without a prescription for years. And he went on the radio last week and said, well, I'll tell you about, all about it when I know what this is all about. Well, Friday, at the end of his show, he dropped the other shoe, acknowledged he was addicted to painkillers, said it started with unsuccessful back surgery 5 years ago, and announced he was going, he had been in rehab twice to try to kick the habit, and announced he was going into rehab again immediately following that broadcast. Rush Limbaugh, in a 1995 interview, said, quote, "Too many whites are getting away with drug use. The answer is to find the ones who are getting away with it, convict them, and send them up the river," unquote. Now, of course, the supporters of Limbaugh have been overflowing with the milk of, with the skim milk of human compassion this week. But one wonders what exactly is going on at that unidentified treatment facility into which Rush Limbaugh has checked himself.
Now, from inside an undisclosed treatment facility, the most listened to drug addict in America on a rush to recovery.
Rush Limbaugh!
Greetings, counselors and tough love administrators all across the fruited plain of my mind. With talent on loan from God and half my brain tied behind my back just to make it fair for the other half, which is still loaded to the flipping gills, I am your avatar of broadcast turpitude, Rush Limbaugh. I want to thank Roger Hitchcock for taking the reins of my radio broadcast for the next little while, but here in the abstinence and broadcasting building that is my own cerebral cortex, we're embarking on the third of an unknown number of hours in the Limbaugh Institute of Advanced Conservative Revisionism, because, my friends, cold turkey is something far worse than what you eat the day after Thanksgiving. This is a situation that I take full responsibility for, even though it was caused by one stupid housekeeper with a big mouth. And I acknowledge that I have often treated those addicted to or just using drugs with great contempt and lack of compassion, advocating that they should be arrested, tried, and jailed. But, my friends, and I wonder at this point if you are, my friends, those weak, undisciplined adherents of a degenerate lifestyle which threatened the very fabric of a God-fearing community had one very dramatic shortfall in their characters. They weren't me. But now I'm not me either. I'm not a conventional air mattress. I'm totally adjustable. Environ-nutsos and feminazis, the homeless and the Democrats who would like nothing better than to have Saddam Hussein as their presidential candidate next year, I love you all. Now, even though I'm not on the air, this is pretty impressive technology, more impressive than the procedure that restored my hearing after it mysteriously disappeared with no connection to any overuse of prescription medication. We have a caller. I really don't know how this is working, but hello, you're on the AIB network.
Hey, Rush, it's Bill Clinton, long-time target, first-time caller.
President Clinton, I'm really not prepared for this. My mind's only on 3-second delay, so...
Don't worry, man, I'm not going to swear at you. I'm going to do something that's going to make you feel so much worse.
Mm-hmm. What's that, sir? Make me go on a date with Mrs. Clinton?
No, Rush. Mm. I'm going to feel your pain.
Oh, no.
And you're going to feel mine, because I'm going to play a saxophone solo over the telephone. Hold on.
Let's put this call on hold, and let me continue here with my exegesis of my position, because this is important. It's about the future of excellence, or the excellence of the future. And speaking of the future, my next book, I Told You I Was Right and I Was Wrong, is due out shortly after I Am. I really should be working on it right now rather than engaging you, my friends of the brain cell audience, but I have always respected you and given you the benefit of your own thoughts, and now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s, but that's what liberals do. And in my new book, I Told You I Was Writing, I'm a liberal too, because to tell you the truth, at the base of all this, ladies and gentlemen, has been a deep and abiding physical attraction to the late Bella Abzug. You can try her yourself in your own home for 30 days, risk-free. But this is what is gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together, my friends, and it is, in fact, my next book. I told you I was gnawing away at the traditional values that hold this country together. We've got another caller. And I want to pay a tribute to the engineers here at the Betty Ford Institute for Advanced Nonlinear Studies for putting it through. Hello, you're on the AIB Network on Open Line Friday.
Rush, it's John Ashcroft, and it's Thursday.
Sir, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the call, but it is my hallucination, and that kind of obviates the conventional calendar approach.
Rush, I know you have a lot of time to fill, but mm-hmm. I've got detainees to sort. I just wanted to call up and say God wants his talent back.
You know, Mr. General, I don't believe in coincidence, but I was just writing the other day in the Limbaugh Letter, the most consistently authoritative political newsletter in the history of the known universe, that I don't believe in coincidence. How about that?
Rush, this treatment stuff is the bunk. Why don't you just come over to the Justice Department and sing hymns with us every morning? Have you off the sauce in no time.
Well, Mr. General, thank you very much for the call. I think we're running out of time on the satellite. I am curious about one thing. How did you get this number?
I've been bugging Bill Clinton's calls.
John Ashcroft, ladies and gentlemen, taking the time to connect with the largest audience of time-release narcotic molecules in the history of broadcast access. We're just beginning this excursion into my new book, I Told You I Was White, but we got some bills to pay and some nausea to deal with, and then we will be back with more of the Rush Limbaugh program, so I urge you not to go away, and if you do, please take me with you.
Deserves music, sweet music. Everyone deserves music, sweet music. Seven in the morning, step on the floor, walking through the kitchen and you open the door. Ain't much left in the bottle of juice, because the seeds that you're planting never reproduce. Computer's still running, but your mind is cracked, because the plans that you made never came to pass. Now you're recognizing the time is hard when you're trying to take a bite at your ATM card. Everyone deserves music, sweet music. Everyone deserves music, sweet music. Making babies in the backseat on tranquilizers. Papa never was much of Rolling Stones. See, he just liked to sit and drink alone. Mama always tried to do the best she could. She would work all day and come home to cook. But we all vain, we all strange, we all stained, we all love to just complain. But nobody wants to seem to get along. See, we got shame, we got pain, we got blame.
song, you know, because
everyone deserves music, sweet music. Everyone deserves music, sweet music. Even our worst enemies, Lord, they deserve music.
Ladies and gentlemen, the good news from Iraq, yes, schools are open, and maybe there's cellular phone service by now. Okay, done. Now news from outside the bubble. The British newspaper The Guardian reports the occupation authority is making preparations to dismantle the food distribution system, which gave free rations of flour, rice, cooking oil, and other staples to every Iraqi for years. Described by the UN as the world's most efficient food network, more efficient than the one that Emeril is on. The system still keeps Iraqis from going hungry. The U.S. civilian administrator of Iraq, Paul Bremer, views it as a dangerous socialist anachronism. The Coalition Provisional Authority is planning to abolish it in January, despite warnings from its own technical experts that this could lead to hunger and riots. All right, we'll watch. Reason to pay attention in January. Hunger and riots, that would be something. By the way, speaking of following up, let's see how much news coverage there is of Arnold in Sacramento once he moves to Sacramento, or once he takes up his job in Sacramento. Because he'll still be, you know, star power, but on the other hand, he'll be in Sacramento. We'll see. U.S. soldiers driving bulldozers with jazz blaring from loudspeakers have uprooted ancient groves of date palms as well as orange and lemon trees in central Iraq as part of a new policy of collective punishment of farmers who do not give information about guerrillas to U.S. troops. One of 32 farmers who saw their fruit trees destroyed, Nusayef Jassim, said, "They told us that the resistant fighters hide in our farms, but this is not true. They didn't capture anything. They didn't find any weapons." Other farmers said U.S. troops had told them over a loudspeaker in Arabic that the fruit groves were being bulldozed to punish the farmers for not informing on the resistance, which is very active in that sunny Muslim district. They made a sort of joke against us by playing jazz music while they were cutting down the trees, said one man. Ambushes of U.S. troops have taken place in the vicinity. The destruction of the fruit trees took place in the second half of last month, but like much which happens in rural Iraq, word of what occurred has only slowly filtered out to the British press. Farmers say 50 families lost their livelihoods, but a petition addressed to the coalition forces lists only 32 people. Asked how much his lost orchard was worth, Nusayef Jassim said in a distraught voice, "It is as if someone cut off my hands and you asked me how much my hands were worth." That's not an answer, sir. You have to do better than that. Now, ladies and gentlemen, some information. A tale of airport security, not from a listener. From the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Associated Press. Airport screeners hired by the government to check baggage for bombs were given most of the answers to the tests they took to qualify for the job, according to an investigation by the Homeland Security Department. Job applicants were not required to show they could identify dangerous objects inside luggage, a critical defect in the written tests, according to the acting Inspector General of the Homeland Security Department. And here would be his name, ladies and gentlemen, Clark Kent Irvin. "It is extremely disturbing," he wrote, "that most of the questions were rehearsed before the final examination, that a number of the questions were phrased so as to provide an obvious clue to the correct answer, and other questions appeared to be simplistic," Irvin wrote. You know what this means, ladies and gentlemen? Yes, if he doesn't work out as governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger could become a baggage screener. News of airport security. The Federal Communications Commission has decided that Bono, the U2 singer, utterance of an obscenity. No, it's a profanity. Can we get that straight? It's a profanity. It's not an obscenity. During the Golden Globe Awards, that's an obscenity. Did not constitute a violation of the nation's broadcast indecency rules. They rejected complaints by the Parents Television Council and others that Bono's use of the phrase, "This is really, really effing brilliant," failed to meet the test for indecency. The Bureau ruled Bono's indiscretion was so, quote, fleeting and isolated that it did not run afoul of the profanity rules. The commission defines indecent speech as language that depicts or describes sexual or excretory activities or organs in terms patently offensive to contemporary community standards. The word effing may be crude and offensive, said the FCC Bureau, but in the context presented here did not describe sexual or excretory organs or activities. Rather, the performer used the word as an adjective or expletive to emphasize an exclamation. Indeed, in similar circumstances, we found that offensive language used as an insult is not within the scope of the commission's prohibition. All right. So as long as it's not sexy or excretory. A school for soubrettes that teaches young Italian women the not-so-subtle skills needed to become television game show hostesses and showgirls has opened near Naples, backed by funding from the European Union. Because the program at the First Tell School has prompted a political storm over the European Union's willingness to put £1 million, that's about $1.5 million, into what critics say is a course for bimbos. Students must be at least 18, unemployed, and come from the Campania region, renowned throughout Italy for the beauty of its women. They'll be taught diction, show presenting, makeup, singing, dancing, acting, and the history of cinema. Dino Giordano said it was aimed at equipping students for a wider career than that pursued by mere bimbos. It will give them a head start in show business, he said. Some pupils seem to have less ambitious objective. Simona Toto said, "I want to be famous, rich, and marry a footballer." An Italian member of parliament questioned why show business was being given priority in an area where there was greater need for more traditional skills such as tailoring. Pietro Vittorelli, a co-founder of the school, said it had already built a studio set and made a dummy program of Quiz Lotto, a typical Italian game show which it was trying to sell to television. "It's not just a school," he said. "It's an industry." You see, Italian television is filled with quiz and variety shows featuring scantily clad gals. So there is really a market. Vital tests in which the British government planned to use to justify the planting of genetically modified corn in Britain have been invalidated. The environment minister who set up the trials says the three-year test will have to be done all over again, and until then, the government cannot responsibly license genetically modified crops. The tests have been rendered invalid by a new European Union. Hey, they're not just giving grants to bimbo schools. They're banning a toxic weed killer, too. It's used on corn, but is suspected of causing cancer and gender bender effects. All right, then. Jay Leno's election night introduction was something he agreed to do with Arnold as a friend, said a spokeswoman for NBC Entertainment. He was not in any way endorsing him politically. It was a personal appearance. Spokeswoman said there were no discussions about the matter at Burbank headquarters. It's an endorsement of their friendship, she responded. Not a political endorsement. He was very careful not to make any political comments. You will continue to see him doing Arnold Schwarzenegger jokes. And John Major, the former British Prime Minister, who has disappeared from British politics, is alive and well and ruling in Australia, or according to the White House. In a spectacular mistake that has caused red faces in Washington and outrage in Canberra, a briefing note for U.S. reporters who will be accompanying President Bush on a visit down under later this month says, little political history, 1996, quote, a Liberal National Party coalition came to power in Australia under Prime Minister John Major. That'll be a surprise, since it's John Howard, whose vital support of Bush over Iraq appears not to have been retained in the institutional memory. Howard said he was unperturbed. There's a long history of them getting the names of Australian prime ministers wrong, and this is not the first mob to have done it, he said. It's a mob. All right, then. That's his subtle way of getting back at us, I suppose. And now, ladies and gentlemen, that's all the news from outside the bubble. Now, let's get up to date on what's going on in Vegas.
Now, as usual, a special edition of Larry King Live. Here's Larry King Live.
We're pre-recording tonight because I'm emceeing the Interpersonal Violence Foundation's Black and Blue Ball. Tomorrow night, the latest in the Kobe Bryant case from five women who tried to have sex with him for the full hour of the show. Tonight, with us in our Los Angeles studio is Jay Leonetti, attorney for the big-haired woman who was sitting in the front row at the last Siegfried and Roy spectacle in Las Vegas, the one where Roy Horn was tragically dragged off stage by one of his tigers. Jay, always good to meet you.
Same here, Larry, a longtime viewer. First-time guest.
We had Siegfried on and Steve Wynn and Bernie Human, the manager of the group, and they were telling us that the tiger really didn't attack Roy. Mm-hmm. It was distracted by a woman with what they call big hair. And you called our office and you asked to come on and defend your client, and on the advice of our lawyer as well as our focus groups, we agreed.
Well, thanks, Larry, and I obviously appreciate the airtime. Now, if we can, I'd like to take it one piece of the puzzle at a time.
Well, it's going to make us take longer to finish the puzzle.
Well, that may be, but my client and the thousands of women like her who have been defamed by this version of events don't deserve to be pilloried for the simple act of backcombing.
That's what, like,
Well, that's basically the opposite of what we middle-aged men do, Larry.
Gotcha.
You know, you can't go after blacks or gays or Jews or fat people or any other group in this country today, Larry, but you can go after big-haired ladies with no fear of lawsuits or bad publicity or any of the rest of the panoply of modern obloquy.
So, Jay, you're saying big-haired women are the new Negroes?
I don't use that term. I call it the other N-word. But, yes, Larry, in a nutshell, that's where this whole controversy belongs, in a nutshell. I mean, for Steve Wynn or Siegfried Fischbacher or Bernie Human to blame this woman, and I want to make clear at this point, Larry, that this isn't even a client of mine per se. I'm representing big-haired women as a class.
Uh-huh.
If this particular individual thinks it's in her best interest to hop on the bandwagon, all the better. But I'm here tonight fighting for the dignity and the rights of all women to wear their hair as flamboyantly as they like without being deprived of their God-given right to enjoy an expensive spectacle involving the allegedly magical disappearance and reappearance of what everyone agrees is very dangerous animals. So, Jay, you blame the animals.
I don't blame the animals. I feel sorry for the animals.
Do you feel sorry for Roy?
Yes, I feel sorry for Roy. Nobody deserves to have happened to him or her whatever did, in fact, happen to him or her.
Do you feel sorry for the woman with the big hair? I mean, is this just a tragedy waiting to happen and then, when it did happen, waiting to stop again?
Larry, look, the only people I don't feel sorry for in this entire saga are the people who are finding it in their best interests to attack so-called big-haired women.
You say so-called. Mm-hmm. Do you have a better name for them?
Well, in our filings, we call them differently haired individuals, or DHIs.
DHIs.
And obviously, if something was wrong with the way the tigers were cared for or housed or trained, it's better and easier for everyone involved to blame this once anonymous woman in the audience who may or may not have had hair that was bigger than other people. Uh-huh. I mean, we've all heard of blaming the victim, Larry, but this is blaming the spectator. Mm. And in a society increasingly built around one form or another of spectatorship, this just isn't right. People have the right to attend rock shows or Vegas spectacles or, for that matter, symphony concerts in the communities that still have them without having to pass muster with the hair police. I mean, you know, today it's big hair scaring the tigers. Tomorrow it's a grotesque comb-over distracting the candidates in a presidential debate. You know, where does this end except in having a federal inspector in every barber shop and beauty salon in the land? That's not the America I grew up in.
No, me neither. So you're suing to get an apology from the Fishbacher people or the hotel in question?
Well, that's just it, Larry. I've watched your show and the others, even the supposedly straight newscasts, and all of them are in this by passing on a piece of folklore from which some of us thought this nation had recovered so many years ago. You know, if portable dryers or hairspray or other hair management technologies had enabled women in Lincoln's time, let's say, to enjoy the benefits of being differently haired, would it have been all right for the president to cancel the Gettysburg Address on the grounds that big hair posed a security threat? Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think any of us wants to live in that nightmare vision of America, Jay.
Well, I appreciate that, Larry. But, you know, we're just trying to make sure that the women in this country don't have to pass some sort of ruler test on their hairstyle before being able to enjoy the rights of audience members, rights that men with almost no hair have fought and died to protect throughout our history. That's all. I don't think it's too much to ask from the Las Vegases and the Siegfrieds and the Bernie Humans of the world.
Yeah, Jay, in the few minutes we have remaining in this segment, what if they could prove that the tiger really was afraid of this woman's hairdo? Does that change anything?
Well, maybe it says that particular tiger had no business in a Las Vegas showroom, Larry. Mm. I know that may sound harsh to some people, but, you know, hairism sounds pretty harsh to me.
So, Jay, is this a class action kind of legal deal you're filing?
Well, I guess you could say it's a lower class action suit, Larry. Mm. And we do look forward to seeing Mr. Wynn and Mr. Fishbacher, and for that matter, they're wild animals in court.
Jay Leonetti, who's looking to represent the big-haired people of the world. Tomorrow night, Senator John McCain and Roger Herring Davis, Princess Diana's private astrologer. From Los Angeles, good night.
Don't be alarmed. I know it's jazz, but we're not cutting down any rocky fruit trees right now. At least I'm not. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius satellite radio. They're not kidding. And around the world via the internet, on your computer, whenever you want it, whenever you want the show, you have to buy your computer. At two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like the media doing follow-up on Arnold, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much, uh-huh. I mean, how much do we know about what happened to Jesse Ventura in Minnesota, except that he ended up being the least watched guy on MSNBC? And that's saying something. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at innerworld.net. Let's show internet services by Steve Mack. Playlists for this broadcast are usually available at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to Doug Patterson at KUOW here in Seattle for making today's show last almost a full hour. Jazz, I'm going to go tear down somebody's apple tree. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and comes to you through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.